Guy Lancaster, editor of the Encyclopedia of Arkansas, has edited a new book of essays, Bullets and Fire, Lynching and Authority in Arkansas, 1840 to 1950. Published by the University of Arkansas Press, the book brings to light a century of vigilante lynching of Arkansas African Americans and efforts by anti-lynching activists to stop it. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich met with the author, and she brings us this history.
Lynching. The word elicits images of frenzied, torchlit, nocturnal mobs roaming deep southern rural townships at the turn of the 20th century, executing African Americans. But historian Guy Lancaster, an expert on race violence in Arkansas, describes lynching as a covert political act.
Lynch mobs, in many respects, assume the role of the state. They aim to punish wrongdoers, but in such a way as to terrorize a larger population of often marginal people, people who exist at the margins of societies by virtue of race or class.
Guy Lancaster is editor of the Encyclopedia of Arkansas History and Culture, a project of the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies at the Central Arkansas Library System. Lancaster is also adjunct faculty at the University of Arkansas Clinton School for Public Service. Lancaster's new book, Bullets and Fire, Lynching and Authority in Arkansas, 1840 to 1950, is published by University of Arkansas Press. Lynchings, he says, were typically triggered by rumors of wrongdoing.
So there are many permutations. A lynch mob can be very private. They can be breaking someone out of jail in the middle of the night. A dozen people go and hang someone up, you know, by moonlight. Or it can be a mob in the thousands that hangs, shoots, burns someone in the middle of a day, operating with complete impunity.
Lancaster says Arkansas ranks fourth in lynchings historically, numbering 366. Mississippi leads the nation with 654, followed by Georgia, 589, and Louisiana, 549. Lancaster says the specter of being lynched plagued black residents and districts in Arkansas and across the South.
You're just living under a complete environment of terror, knowing that this violence can break out and consume you even if you haven't done anything wrong. They're living among people who've killed their fathers or their sons, and they have no recourse to justice.
Lynchings were subject to public fascination, frequently reported in local and state papers, which is one way historians can trace the phenomenon.
You know, I think as more and more newspapers get digitized, more and more diaries, letters are put into formal collections, that number is going to increase.
And grisly photographs. The untold history of lynching in America fully came to light in 2000 with the publication of the book Without Sanctuary, Lynching Photography in America by James Allen. Guy Lancaster's book contains no photographs, but it does contain 10 chapters, the first by Kelly Houston Jones, an assistant professor at Austin Peay University, on the lynching of enslaved African Americans in antebellum Arkansas.
The scholarship so far has suggested that slaves were not often lynched because they were property, they were valuable. You wouldn't destroy property. But what she found is slave patrols often participated in the murder of African Americans in ways that bordered on lynching, could be considered lynching, but also mobs broke slaves out of jails. That was the case up in Washington County near Cane Hill. A slave had murdered his master, Jacob Mullis, I think the name was, and turned himself in, went to jail, and the mob broke him out of jail and strung him up and killed him. And in that particular case, there was a suggestion or rumors that that slave had been romantically involved with Jacob's much younger wife.
Victims of lynchings were most often, Lancaster says, accused of murder, assault, or rape, alleged crimes never adjudicated. a chapter titled At the Hands of a Person or Persons Unknown by South Carolina archivist and local historian Nancy Snell Griffith examines the nature of lynch mobs.
In many respects, the town's elite who are coming out to engage in these lynchings. There was a lynching in Jonesboro, Arkansas in 1920. A man named Wade Thomas accused of assaulting a police officer. And the mob that broke open the door to the jail, the mayor later said he couldn't order anyone, you know, to fire upon the mob because once the doors were broken open, he saw the best of the town there. People who were business leaders, church leaders, you know, well-known people heading up the mob.
Lancaster says many lynchings occurred around the turn of the 20th century due to economic upheaval and social agitation.
So you start to see lynching as a way to maintain a traditional social structure during an era that's seeing Arkansas and other states undergoing significant economic and social transformation.
An essay by University of Arkansas Little Rock historian Vincent Vinikos describes a serial lynching which occurred over days, perhaps one of the worst in the nation, in the cotton-growing district around St. Charles, a port town in Arkansas County.
And I think what Vincent Vinikos does in his chapter is show how limiting the sources are, that we have reports that give us a body count and we have a supposed initiating event. But despite the fact that 13 were killed there, we honestly know very little about what happened there.
Guy Lancaster wrote a chapter on lynchings in Pulaski County, the site of some of the worst mob violence in the state, including one event circa 1927.
That includes the lynching of John Carter, was alleged to have assaulted a white woman and her daughter in southwestern Little Rock. And the city just exploded. A posse went after him. They found him and strung him up, shot bullets into him, and then tied his body to a car and dragged that to the corner of 9th and Broadway, which then was the very heart of a very vibrant black business district. And there they tore pews out of Bethel Amy Church and took wood from local businesses, and right there at that intersection burned his body on a major bonfire. Somewhere between 4,000 and 7,000 white people were rioting in that area, and that would have been a significant chunk of the city's population at the time. And cops were either nowhere to be seen. They refused to go out. The chief of police and the mayor had both vacated the town conveniently.
Charisse Jones Branch, associate professor of history at Arkansas State University, chronicles the rise of anti-lynching activism in Arkansas starting in the 1930s, including a state chapter of the Association of Southern Women for the Prevention of Lynching.
And the goal of the organization was to essentially shame law enforcement into working hard to prevent lynchings. You know, they would write to sheriffs and encourage sheriffs to work hard to prevent lynchings and produce a list of, you know, honorable sheriffs who had trying to publicize those law enforcement officials who worked to prevent lynching and heap praise upon them. So trying to reverse this dynamic. But it was an all-white women's organization.
A final essay authored by William Pruden III, Director of Civic Engagement at Ravenscroft School in Raleigh, North Carolina, reveals a dearth of federal laws to stop lynching in America and how, finally, in 2005, U.S. Senators Mark Pryor and Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas co-sponsored a resolution apologizing for failing to do so. Lancaster's new book, Bullets and Fire, Lynching and Authority in Arkansas, one reviewer says, is part of a new wave of state-level studies on lynching in America. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Guy Lancaster's new book, Bullets and Fire, Lynching and Authority in Arkansas, 1840 to 1950, is published by the University of Arkansas Press, and it's available online at uapress.com. A book signing with Guy Lancaster takes place at the Fayetteville Public Library February 4th. All royalties from the book sales will be donated to the Arkansas Historical Association to endow a scholarship in the name of the late C. Calvin Smith, a professor of history at Arkansas State University and the first African-American faculty member hired by that university. This is Ozarks at Large.